This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. We are live here inside the MDN studios. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass, MGo Blog Roundtable in the house. Brian Cook, how you doing?
Hello.
How are things over at the blog, my man?
Spinny. I don't know what may I say.
Brian doesn't know this, but he bought my dinner last night.
What?
How did you do that?
Were you on the hockey cast? You were on the hockey cast.
David Nasternak and I. If you're anyone interested in extended hockey conversations, David and I did that last night for MGo Blog, and my compensation was Brian, unknown to Brian, bought my sandwich after that.
You're a swell guy, Brian.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, Dave's in a lot of trouble.
The voice you heard is Craig Ross.
You're a negative Nelly, Sam.
Well, listen. I want to take this time, and Brian, you can join me in this, because this is a special, special, day in Michigan basketball. This is senior night. Xavier Simpson, outstanding player. But we got to talk about the graduation of the greatest center in Michigan basketball history.
Oh, man.
We got to highlight that.
He already hammered me in the last section.
And Terry Mills is my guy, man. I gotta stick up for Terry here in a minute.
He's had a bit of a tough senior season, but he's on a Final Four team.
He was
the best backup center in college basketball as a sophomore, and he was key part of one of the best defenses in college basketball.
Thank you, Brian.
To be clear, that was more a ribbing of Craig than it was a slight of John Teske. I think those two guys have been outstanding players for Michigan, in that they were guys that weren't necessarily looked at when they came in as frontline guys. No. So to speak, but look at how they developed over the course of their respective careers here in Michigan,
especially
to be frontline guys for them.
I mean, X has been a very unusual guy. I mean, he's an unusual personality, start there. He's a sort of a tough guy, and I don't think there's anything fake about that. Yesterday, at the press conference, someone asked him if there was going to be any tears for him tonight. He goes, "Are you kidding me? My dad'll cry." and there was no, he is what he is and what he seems to be. But I've never seen a player who sort of remodeled himself. He came in, he had no shot at all. He couldn't shoot the ball. In fact, 3 years ago, I was a better shooter than X. I have no question about that. And yet, he kept...
We're going to get another phone call.
Yeah. He kept...
I think we are.
He kept building and building, he added that hook shot. He added a left-handed hook shot. He got better at taking the ball to the basket. His free throw shooting went from beyond dreadful to at least vaguely plausible, and his 3-point shooting, I think he's about 35% or 36% this year from three. And so, I've never seen a guy who was so relentless at remaking and rebuilding his game in a positive way.
I think it's a great point. When he was recruited as the alternative to Cassius Winston, I think that there was some excitement and anticipation, and then he got here as DeWalt's backup, and as I think even from a coaching perspective, as they watched him, or as Beeline watched him, and I don't think I'm being presumptuous here and talking about what I think he thought, but I think he thought that's not going to be my point guard of the future. That's not going to be the guy that's going to going to run the show for me, because this, his offensive limitations are too pronounced.
Yeah.
And then so you go out, you go get Eli Brooks. You remember, so that next year
they got Jaron Simmons,
and they got Jaron Simmons too. And so you remember there was some dance. Is it going to be Jaron Simmons? Is it going to be Eli Brooks? They had to come back around to it being Xavier Simpson.
Yeah, and the reasons for that are obvious. Like I when I first saw Xavier Simpson, I remember posting in the MGO blog Slack, why did Beeline recruit this 5'8 guy who can't shoot? And that's a little bit of an exaggeration, but it's not that much of an exaggeration.
Well, he's about 6 foot tall.
Well, I was mad.
Okay.
I was upset. We weren't doing good. So sometimes I post on Slack during games when I'm like stuff that I wouldn't put on Twitter.
Okay.
And that was one of them. And for him to come back from that start and be, you know, one of the definitive point guards in the last 20 years of Michigan basketball. I mean, this is one of the things that, you know, I have a cousin who goes to Kentucky, and I'm like, isn't it weird? Just you have a totally new team every year, and you don't get to see anyone develop. And I think about that conversation I had when I see X. One of the great pleasures of Michigan basketball over the last 20 years has been watching X remake himself every year. And I kind of wish we'd redshirted him.
Me too. Because wouldn't you like to see him back again?
I would like to see one more year of X relentlessly improving himself.
Me too.
You're about to have our friend Zeke on Twitter is about to drive off a cliff hearing you say that. He's the biggest X detractor in the world.
Oh, my goodness. He's a starting point guard on teams that finished 6th and 7th on KenPom. Michigan's currently 15th, and they missed Isaiah Livers for big chunks of the year. Like, there's something right with what Xavier Simpson does on a basketball court, you know? And there are times where his limitations become apparent, but he does so much stuff that people are going to miss next year.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy. I think you're absolutely right. We were just having a discussion about who is your point guard next year.
Yeah.
You know, does Dave DeJulius, does the maturation process really take hold and he showed that he can run a team if, you know, assuming that you get Josh Christopher, and this is Tim McCormick's point on the Michigan Basketball Insider podcast. He said, I would put Josh Christopher at the one spot and say, hey, young fella, make it happen.
Well, you know, I think it'll be Eli just because he brings you a baseline of excellent defense and he can shoot. He's not going to be the guy who plunges into the lane
right,
and makes a lot of plays, but, you know, in terms of you are who you can guard, Eli plays the one. And then I'm looking at a combination of Josh Christopher probably later in the year. I've seen what his high school runs. He's going to need some pick and roll work. And then I think, you know, Franz is going to be initiating a large portion of the offense next year. He's got his toes wet on pick and roll so far, and his numbers are excellent in pick and roll on synergy. He's obviously developing a lot. He's got a lot of runway left. So I think, you know, kind of picture the sophomore Stauskas year where, you know, you've got
someone else said that. Who else? You know, Mike Porter. Mike, you listening? He said, Mike Porter said, look for next year what we saw from Nick Stauskas from year one to year two. We're going to see that from Franz next year. He said that earlier this week.
And so. Franz is much better as a driver and hasn't displayed the shot yet. But in terms of a guy who can get stuff done in the pick and roll, he's super long. So we can, like, if you hedge him with a big, he's going to be able to make that pass.
Like, he's going to be so much stronger next year, too.
Yeah.
I mean, and Franz has just been, through the course of the season, has just gotten better and better and better. And in the last couple of games, he and X have been certainly Michigan's best players. There's not any question about it. And I wonder, though, is he at NBA flight risk at this point?
I don't think so. Just because his shooting isn't there. And also, you know, his family. Like, I kind of feel like Mo wishes he was still in college sometimes. And, you know, he came over here for a reason. I don't think that reason was to be a one and done.
He said as much going back to when media day. He said, you know, I've done the pro thing. I've lived the pro life.
Yeah.
And he said, this is a different life. I want to experience college for a bit. Grow my game while experiencing college for a bit. And he made it sound like it's not just a stopover. Like, he wasn't looking at this. He wasn't looking for this to be just about getting to the NBA as quick as possible.
Well, a couple things about Franz that have been great and I didn't exactly expect. One is he's become pretty good on defense. Two is he's
see, I'm not surprised by that.
You are. I'm a little surprised. I was wrong. I mean, he's become a much better defender than I thought he could be, because he really does move his feet. He's a way ahead of his brother. In fact, right now he's a better defender now than Mo was by his senior last year.
Well, Mo was a wing who grew into a post.
Yeah,
and Derek Walton said this when they got him. He said, "Look, I played with Franz for a year. I've seen him. He's a guy that can guard multiple positions. He moves his feet really well." He's a high IQ guy.
Yep.
So, you know, the issue is going to be, you know, just physically, he's not very big right now. But as far as being able to move and stay in front of people, sometimes smaller people, he can do that.
He's Michigan's leading rebounder in the Big Ten.
It's just crazy.
He's almost seven rebounds a game. Now, some of that is a team reality.
No, I'm saying it's crazy that a guy that slender.
Derek
can
Walton
be as
Michigan's leading rebounder.
Which was crazy, too.
But Derek Walton is the best 6-foot rebounder in the history of the game.
But you look at how slight Franz is, and he is still such an effective rebounder. Length has a lot to do with that.
Yeah,
but
he's playing the three.
He's also a guy you can tell. I mean, the best rebounders are not just those that have the physical gifts, but they also have great anticipation. They can read where a ball is going to come off the rim.
Who was the best rebounder you ever saw?
Dennis Rodman.
Of course. And he was 6'6", 6'7", maybe. I mean, the best rebounder that I ever saw was Rodman, and it wasn't because of his, although he could run and jump, but it was because of his anticipation and his ball intelligence.
The thing about Franz is that he wasn't a very good rebounder the first half of the season.
That's what's so remarkable.
It's clear that, like, you know, there was a sit down with Juwan Howard, and Juwan's like,
rebound, damn it.
Well, he's like, you can't shoot for crap, buddy. Like, you got to go do some other things. And then he started doing those things. So he's been much more active. He gets at least a block and a steal per game, it feels like, usually two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Michigan didn't have Eli Brooks against Wisconsin and they were getting driven to the basket over and over again, he was the one guy who wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
Like, he was not the guy getting driven, right? Like,
right.
And
he was the guy. He wound up being, other than X, of course, you know, the only guy offensively that was a consistent threat, but it seemed like they got to him late in the game.
Yeah, well, you know what he's shooting from two in Big Ten play? 61%. And almost all that is initiated by himself, even if it's coming from the perimeter or if it's a cut. So, like, he's a guy who's already fourth in the league, and, like, the guys in front of him are guys like Austin Davis, right? They're all bigs. So for a wing who weighs, you know, 150 pounds, who's 12 years old, like, that's a pretty promising situation.
Right, yeah. So I don't think, I don't think he's a flight risk this year, which sets up very, very, very well for this, what Brian said and what Mike Porter said about him making a huge jump from this year to next. But I did want to get into the games last week before we focus on this week, and most notably the Maryland game. You know, obviously Wisconsin, you're missing Eli Brooks. The utter collapse of the defense. I mean, I thought they'd have issues, but you know, this is a team that had been pretty good at guarding the 3-point line. Now, granted, Wisconsin is a team that can throw 5 3-point shooters on the floor at the same time, so that's going to tax anyone, but it taxed them a lot more. Meanwhile, on the other end, you know, this is a game where Isaiah Livers just wasn't on point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think that Livers' offense was a problem in this game. Michigan scores 1.12 points per possession. They have an Austin Davis bunny that doesn't go down. They have two consecutive DDJ breakaway layups that
don't go down.
They missed six layups.
Yeah,
and they missed six layups. Like,
X missed a couple.
Yeah, and X is going 13-21 even when he does miss a couple.
Right.
And, like, so they were so intent on shutting off the 3-point line that they let X go nuts. And if Michigan turns in a defensive performance anywhere near what they've done the rest of the season, that's a win, right? So the offense doesn't really bother me. The defense, so you're missing Eli Brooks, and then you get a 5-out offense. And I think the 5-out offense was a problem against Ohio State, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Teske, I mean, you're a drop coverage team. You're not comfortable switching. Teske's in foul trouble in both games. So you got Austin Davis trying to check Caleb Wesson and Micah Potter, and there's no rim protection, and so people feel uncomfortable about the rim protection. They get too far up on Wisconsin guys, and they get driven to the bucket over and over again by frickin' Trice and Davison, who are two of the most rim-averse guys in the league. So that's a problem. And then against Ohio State, they're backing off Dwayne Washington because they know what happened against Wisconsin, and they know they have no rim protection. So
give up the layup. Give up the layup, man. You know, I'd rather have that than give that guy over.
Yeah, and, you know, in the Wisconsin game, I felt really stupid by the end of that game because I was thinking that at mid-year when Eli was struggling, maybe we could play a big at the two. Well, that was an outcome that just didn't really work, at least certainly against Wisconsin. They just were too big. They couldn't check the perimeter. But the interesting thing, I checked what they did in the first half. I didn't check the whole game, and I said, okay, are we switching? Are we dropping? In drop coverage in the first half, there were seven possessions where we dropped, and Wisconsin scored 16 points.
That's bad.
That's 16 points. Mm-hmm. When switch coverage, there were 12 possessions. They scored 10. When we were switching off the ball screens, Michigan was reasonably effective, more than reasonably effective. But when we were dropping, it was a debacle. And so I don't know what that means, and I don't know if that carried through very much to the second half. But
Tim said he went to practice last week, and they were, you know, they were icing ball screens in practice. They got to the games, and it was like, where is it?
Well, but that could be too. In the Wisconsin game, at least you're playing a lineup that really hasn't played all year.
Yeah, and you're trying to switch, which they haven't done much all year.
Although the switching worked.
Yeah, but it's not like it was perfect either.
No, it wasn't perfect, but it was
better
okay
than drop coverage.
Yeah, the drop coverage was a disaster.
All right, so you get to the Ohio State game, and you know, not to say that the Dwayne Washington, Dwayne Washington threes, a lot of hand down, man down threes there. It felt like, but the haymaker, the bank shot threes were just demoralizing.
Yeah, and they're demoralizing, and they're also on a stretch there where they go like six straight pull up twos, and I don't know if there's really much you can do about that. Yeah. That was a disappointing offensive game, particularly from Livers.
Yeah.
Because Livers is, like, it's one thing for Livers to attack a closeout. He can attack a closeout, but he's going straight up ISO on guys. He doesn't have lateral mobility to do that, even when his ankle is completely healthy. And so we get these ugly, like, forced ISO possessions where he gets forced into contested, heavily contested.
And what was he? Was he 2-for-8 from three or something?
2-for-8, he missed all his three of his twos, and he committed a charge. So
yeah, and you've seized on exactly my first point on the Ohio State game. Is that Michigan has been good this year, by and large, at not forcing shots. And Isaiah Livers, over his career, has been pretty good, I mean, to very good at not forcing shots. Well, of his 11 shots in that game, 8 are forces. 8 are bad shots that are forced for no apparent purpose, you know, often, almost always, early-ish in the shot clock. I mean, we had 11 forced shots in the game, and eight were from Isaiah. I don't get it all of a sudden why he's playing hero ball in this game. Because that hasn't been Isaiah Livers over his career. He's been pretty judicious about, I think, his shot selection and has tended to take good shots.
You know, he was hunting in this game, and I don't know if that was a decision on his part, or if they told him he needed to do it. But you could see that there was something conscious there. I got to go get some offense in this game. It wound up in some forced shots, but even the open looks that he got, though,
there weren't many. There were three.
I mean, open looks that don't go down, I'm fine with, right?
Yeah, like, it just, me too.
It's a make or miss league, right? So the Ohio State's defense, I thought, was very good. It frustrated Michigan a lot. They couldn't find open looks from behind the arc. Like, in a lot of games this year, I've been like, make a shot. These are wide open shots. Against Ohio State, those were pretty well contested. So they did a better job against Michigan behind the line than a lot of people.
And still, the game is tied with approximately 6 minutes to go. And
then they can't miss.
And they can't miss, and they have two banked in threes.
Someone on Twitter suggested that those should be negative 3 points, which would be amazing.
That would be spectacular. I like that idea. Not negative three, maybe, but a turnover.
No, negative, like, you'd put up the three, and we're banking, and everybody at home would go, no! It would be amazing.
Yeah.
There's this element.
I like the idea of subtracting points from a team score for certain lack of elegance in the game. So I like that.
Yeah, I felt the second one, the Wesson one, or the second Wesson one. It's the game's over. Yeah. They hit this crap.
Yeah.
Well,
you saw in the
anymore.
Wisconsin game too. There was a few shots that were just at key moments, just absurd shots. One that was shot about 40 feet in the air.
The fadeaway. I think that was a lean forward.
Yeah. Lean forward.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, an absurd shot that goes in about once every 5 years. And, you know, so to some extent, Michigan's had some bad luck aside from problems that they've had with their play.
All right, so we'll get in on the other side. No need to scout Maryland, right? I mean, no need to scout Nebraska. We can talk a little Maryland. We need to get into some Michigan hockey with Big Ten tournament action.
I want to talk
up as well
for a minute about we come back about Tom Izzo's sartorial choices.
Okay.
This is you know what? You aren't the only person.
I know. I heard Monday, and I have an answer. I know the answer. So.
All right, we got to get to a break. I can't even remember. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I have the answer to these questions. Yes,
you talked to Tom.
Yeah, like East Lansing, Tom Izzo is en fuego, and that's the answer.
Okay. He looked older than Craig last night. Did you see that game? He looks dead. He looks like he has been risen from the grave.
Sam, we got into the conversation about Izzo because we were talking about could a Michigan fan vote for Izzo, like could an Alabama fan vote for Tuberville in the primary?
That's right. Yeah. Hell no. Tuberville's in a runoff, isn't he? Aren't they in a runoff?
He is.
Yeah, because you have to get a certain percent to win the vote. If not, the top two go into a runoff, and that's what
I mean,
they
he's not competing against the AAC, so he might do okay. You get East Carolina up in there, and he's done.
Right.
You know, he's not, you're right. He's just not, he's the sort of zombie version of Yosemite Sam at this
point. We're talking
about
Izzo again?
Yeah. Hey, man, the dude has been, what has he been there, 25 years now? He's going to start looking old at some point, and he looks like he's about to stroke out every game.
He dropped an F-bomb on, I think, Gabe Brown. They cut to the sideline.
He dropped a F-bomb?
Yeah, it was like, what the bleep were you doing or something like that? Why were you not the bleep over there?
He normally strings the Fs together.
He got directly in his face and called him an MF-er. And I was like, wow, it's 2020, buddy. Like, that's...
Grow up.
Are we talking... I mean...
Hey, look.
I think we're just flat out worn out.
When you go play for Tom Izzo, you know what you're signing up for.
Yeah,
that's what he says. So he's gonna be him. If you came to play for me, you're gonna get F bombs and MFs.
So just, sick of coaching the way I gotta coach and practice the way I gotta practice.
It remains a mystery why people would sign up for that.
What the hell are you gonna do?
Well, I'm gonna talk about it on the radio.
This is big time athletics.
I hope that guy coaches forever.
Me too. I will miss him. I mean,
no, because Dane Fife is going to be the next guy, and I look forward to the Dane Fife era.
Why Dane Fife?
Because everyone is going to be Foster Lawyer. They're going to clone Foster Lawyer, and they're going to play 13 Foster Lawyers.
Now Tom Izzo. I mean, he's
that's what sucks about basketball.
Tom Izzo is. What can you say? I mean, he's a self caricature, but you'll miss him. He's like the kind of guy like
I will not miss
Lou
Tom
Hansen
Izzo.
Or Bobby Knight that you just miss not being in the league because they're amusing.
Yeah, he is amusing.
No, it's not. It's depressing the way he screams at everybody and like people are like, oh well, we'll give you this call. There you go.
Oh yeah, that is frustrating. But I don't have any sort of sympathy or, you know, man, lay off of that guy for any of his players. Because, look, I think there are certain guys that respond better to that kind of thing. And if you don't respond to that kind of coaching,
don't go play for Tom Izzo.
This is big time athletics.
I don't know, man. It's like, what's the difference between Tom Izzo and the guy who throws basketballs at people from Rutgers? Not that much.
When you start putting your hands, when you start, physically accosting people, then that's different.
He walks right up to that line.
He walks up to the line.
Every day.
Don't go play for him. If that's, You know, that I think that's the simple thing. That's it. So, you know, Gabe Brown can't complain. Did Tom Izzo do that last year? Did he do it 5 years ago?
It seems worse.
Did he do it 10 years ago?
It seems like, I don't know. You know, there's that point at which, not Bobby Williams, Bob Knight just lost his faculties and got crazier and crazier. Like Woody. Like there's some point in the aging process for these little dictators that they just can't keep it together as much. And I feel like we're approaching the point
maybe
where Tom we'll Izzo see. Like puts a ref in a chokehold and then a check gets called on the other coach.
And then that will definitely be over the line for sure.
Don't you somewhat feel like this? He thinks this is the only way his team responds to him at this point.
I don't know.
Because it doesn't seem like they respond to anything else.
I think he's just been doing this so long that he can't imagine another way to live.
Well, he certainly got them together. This week, they take out Maryland. They get down with 20 or so against Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Penn State, which sets up to get back to Maryland, sets up Michigan in this Maryland game. Maryland, you know, a week ago, they got sole possession of first place.
Yeah, I was hoping that Maryland would have wrapped up the conference by now so that they may be a little less focused and on Michigan, and B, maybe we would get a nice officiated game.
Watching Turgeon implode down the stretch is mildly entertaining, though, for people not named Ira.
There's a verb that you need to learn. It's called Turgeon, and it's how to blow a three-game lead with four games to go in a season. And you were watching it unfold in front of your very eyes.
Yeah.
You know, you got Anthony Cowan, obviously, who is an outstanding lead guard, and Stick Smith. You know, one of the things I've heard a lot of people mention is, you know, you get into their bench and that is what really sinks Maryland. They have a lesser bench than most upper tier teams.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't remember if it's Ayala or Wiggins, but they have a guy having a sophomore Tim Hardaway year where he's shooting 26% from three, and you know that's not his talent level, but that's his season.
I'm betting it's Ayala. I'm gonna pull it.
I think it's
though.
Wiggins actually. So they have.
What is Ayala shooting from three?
I think Ayala.
What is Ayala shooting from three? Ira?
I don't have the stats before.
Who's having a better 3-point shooting year, Ayala or Wiggins? Do you know?
I would guess Tom Ayala off the top of my head, but
anyway.
Have a computer, look it up. People, let's get with the program. Mm-hmm. Sticks is a problem because he's turned into a legitimate stretch big, and we saw what happened the last few times. We've also seen Michigan improve a lot of things that they weren't very good at over the course of the year. So Nebraska has a little bit of stretch from the Kevin Cross kid who's shooting 26% from three and shot like 8-for-30 against Michigan. So that'll be a bit of a practice run. And then Maryland is another test where you can see if you can improve against this style of offense because they can go 5 out pretty legitimately. Mm-hmm. Daryl Morcell has improved a lot.
Yeah, he's a good player.
He's one of the best wing defenders in the league, and now he's actually doing a little bit more on offense. But their shooting has been so hot and cold that they have issues when they're taking a lot of threes because they have no other choice a lot of the time. And then, you know.
So the answer to your question is it actually is Wiggins who's shooting 30.7% of the season, Ayala at 26% of the year.
So they're both.
They're both.
Dante Scott's 32.5%. Cowan's only at 32.5%. Morcell's up to 33%. Stick Smith is actually the highest of all of them at this point at close to 38%.
And Ayala's taken 142 threes at 26%. So
he was a big factor in the game, the win over Michigan State. Yeah. Up in East Lansing.
Yeah, so they shoot, they're a top 50 in number of threes attempted, and they're 287th in number of threes made. So for them, it really is about like, okay, they're going to take a bunch of threes. Are they going to go down? Does Michigan's curse sink them in this game?
Mm-hmm.
And if Sticks goes off for 4 or 5 or whatever, that's one thing. But
if the other guys
if
are
if Ayala and Wiggins start making threes, it's like.
And whatever we do. David DeJulius, I'm talking specifically to you. Don't slap the floor.
Don't go under a screen.
Don't slap the floor. He can go under a screen as long as he didn't slap the floor beforehand, because Michigan State did that, and Maryland had 14 points the whole half, and they hit 4 straight 3s. It was the
mother
of all.
They scored 14 unanswered after the floor slap.
After the floor slap. It was the Mona Lisa of floor slaps. Do not slap the floor.
It was a glorious experience to be in the Breslin Center for it. I'll tell you that.
You were there for that game?
Yeah, we were there for that. It was great.
That was pretty amazing. Yeah,
yeah, it was great. Except, it's a lot of fun watching out, walking out of Breslin Center after something like that.
Yeah, not so much the other 17 minutes of the second half.
No, it was dreadful to be there for most of the second half, and you're just going, you're just, because it felt like a normal Turgeon experience until the last 2.5 minutes of the game.
It is funny that, like, people on Twitter who aren't Maryland people will wander into a Maryland game, and they'll just watch it on TV, and they inevitably say, does this team have plays? Do they do things? And the answer is, not really. So
actually, from what I've been told, they actually do, and then the players just decide to do whatever they want anyway. That's from someone inside within pretty close to the program.
I just hope the Big Ten doesn't assign us Lewis Garrison and Rob Riley and Karstensen. And we have, if I see those three out there, then I'll just say, forget it.
I sat one seat away from Craig Ross during a Lewis Garrison game at the Chrysler Center. That in itself was quite an experience.
Sorry.
Did you call him a yutz?
No, I don't.
Did you call him
actually, he might have.
A bum?
Worse than that.
You heckle the refs?
Well, occasionally, yeah. I mean, it's certain refs. I mean, in the past, no, but Lewis Garrison gets under my skin because...
Terry Weimer doesn't get under your skin?
No, not so much. I mean, Weimer, as long as you're not playing Ohio State, who we did the Ohio State game, but as long as
both
we're not playing Ohio State, then I think Weimer will call a reasonable game. It's just you don't trust him. He is in the Ohio Sports Hall of Fame, and so...
Yeah,
I don't trust.
Anytime
him.
I talk about Weimer, I hear from
he's a competent
from Sean Patterson. That's his guy. He's like, man, look, you know, Terry Weimer, the dude is on the take. He's on the take for Ohio State.
He's
on the payroll.
I'm not going near.
He's another staff member.
I'm not going that far with Weimer because I think he's a competent ref. But we have gotten some bad calls.
You just said when they play Ohio State.
When they play Ohio State, I don't trust it. But in other games, I trust Weimer and. You know, you'd like to get Zells, who's a good ref, or some of the other refs in the Big Ten. I still wish, you know, Ted Valentine was around.
Me too.
No.
I miss TV Ted.
TV Ted
wouldn't let Tom Izzo do all that Tom Izzo stuff.
He did that for years.
He would give it back to him.
Yeah, but he wouldn't call any of the techies. He'd just be like,
there were two refs for many years who would not let Izzo get away with stuff or minimize it, and one was Valentine. The other was, of course, Steve Wellmer, the best ref in the history of the Big Ten, who unfortunately got hurt and retired. But... you know, so yeah.
Y'all are crazy.
And TV Ted liked Beeline.
Okay.
That was one of his guys.
Oh, yeah. That's because he could call whatever he wanted against Michigan, and Beeline would be like, I disagree with that.
That's because Beeline was his grad student teacher when Teddy V was in college in West Virginia.
You were paying close attention. That was one of Beeline's dudes. Okay, we need to get to a break. All right, so fellas, and we have Craig Ross, Brian Cook, MGO Blog Roundtable. Joining Ira Weintraub and I here inside the MDN studios on the Michigan Insider. So Michigan hosting Michigan State, Big Ten tournament action on the ice over at Yost. And we were talking earlier during one of the earlier breaks, been a tale of two seasons, it seems, when you talk about the first half of the season, second half. They went from last place to, what is it, a three seed, I think?
They're third. They were pretty close to
They almost won. If you could change one goal on the year, they would have won the Big Ten. If you had the opportunity to say, I want to change this goal, Michigan would have won the Big Ten.
And what goal is that?
There are a couple of games. You could just
probably
change.
A Penn State goal. Like late, and they had an extra tactor on and just kind of bounced to the wrong guy. They put it in. They tied the game.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a lunch bucket crew. They have one of the best goalies in the league, and whenever
most valuable player in the Big Ten, in my opinion.
And whenever you have a goalie with the 930 or 940 save percentage, you're doing a lot of work in front of him. You know, Sean Hunwick, not an NHL goalie, had a 940 save percentage because when he came in, his team did a lot of work in front of him. So they're much more responsible defensively, and they've perked up their offense. I don't know whether it's luck or they're actually doing better, but you know, about midway through the season. They had a 5.8 shooting percentage, which is historically awful.
Yeah, it was. I think I checked. It was like 57th out of 60 teams.
Yeah, like Red's last team shot 7.8%, and the three of the top four scorers are still on this team. So, you know, the drop-off there is probably just some rotten luck. But they did get better in terms of just how they feel as a hockey team. They were much more organized about getting the zone, fewer uncontrolled zone exits, more controlled zone entries. Beecher kind of came on, Hayhurst came on. You saw Michigan put together a real top line without compromising any other defensive principles. And I mean, it's still a team where if the other team scores a first goal, you're like, oh, here we go. Because you can't expect them to score a ton. I know they've scored a ton over the second half of the season, but a lot of that was bad goaltending. So, you know.
Well, so they split with Michigan State in the regular season. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of the two early in the season were different in that they were close. Michigan kind of seemed like they kind of handled them the last couple of games.
Well, their first series was miserable because, Michigan had a lead, I think, in both games.
Both games. They're up like 3-1, I think.
And then coughed it up on a bunch of garbage. And it just felt like the season was over at that point because Michigan State, if you get swept at home by Michigan State, ball game, right? And then they had a series at Munn and then at the Joe where their 940 goalie played like half of Michigan's goals in those games were so bad.
Yeah, Lethemann, who has really been a good goalie this year, was terrible.
If he repeats that performance, Michigan should distance themselves from this team. I don't know if you can rely on that because the rest of his season has been very good. Mm-hmm. I mean, Michigan is and Michigan State are currently very similar teams. They rely on their goalies. They don't offer up a lot of odd man rushes. They don't have a lot of scoring punch. You know, I would actually rate Michigan State's first line above Michigan's first line.
Kotarenko is a nice player at Michigan State. He may be a better scorer than anyone Michigan has.
But Michigan finished first in the league in goal differential, and I think Michigan State was about zero.
They were zero. Yeah, the Big Ten is odd. You had three teams that were exactly zero, and one team that was plus four, and then Michigan and Penn State were plus 22, and Wisconsin was minus 26.
So the Hockey League is almost exactly like the Basketball League this year, except they didn't do as well in the non-conference. So there's Wisconsin, who's like the Nebraska of the league because their goaltender is terrible. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else is 500 or like three games above 500. And it's I've never seen anything so tightly grouped.
So a decent chance then for Michigan to...
Yeah, they're actually 16th in pairwise. If they move up to 14, they've got a pretty decent shot in at-large bid. That would require at least winning this series, probably sweeping it, and then they might have to win the semi.
One more game.
And then they're in the final, so they could get an auto bid by winning that. And if they win the tournament, they'll probably be something like a 3 seed. So they put themselves in a position where, you know, they're playing well, they're going into a situation where they got a home series. They got a decent shot. I just wish they hadn't dug themselves such a big hole in the first half of the season because then we'd be talking about seeding, not selection.
Yeah, the odd part of this season – are we done? Okay. The odd part of this season is that how up and down it's been in this year. I mean, we've got two games at home against Notre Dame. We think that they're on the verge of potentially winning the Big Ten, and then they tanked. And then came back last week and played great against Minnesota and take 5 or 6 points, and they're right back in it.
Man did have to have 55 saves in one game.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back next week to talk all about it, so be sure to tune in, and be sure to tune in for us tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider. Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
Got it better!